Welcome to GLHF, the world's first podcast in video games. How do you feel about crime, Austin?
If I had to put numbers on it, I would say 10 for, 90 against.
Okay, well, we've been doing a bit of crime in this game, but I think we need to stop because I've had a new experience that has scared me straight, if you will.
Can I tell you how excited I am to hear what you're about to tell us, me, and the viewers? I'm just a viewer at this point.
I had
to hear what's about to happen.
Jury duty.
What happened? Jury duty.
For the first time.
One of the greatest. You were in the belly of the beast. The thing that makes this society run. You got to sniff it. You were right up to it.
I was sniffing it good and long and deep.
And it scared you.
I was in the box. I was watching a criminal trial. And
crazy.
As of this morning, it's officially all over, so I'm pretty sure I can talk about it. But if you notice any suspicious cuts in this video, it's because I got scared that I'm not supposed to say something.
Because you emailed your lawyer.
Right.
I'm sure we can just Google it. It'll be Googleable.
I emailed the judge.
There's got to be some lawyers in the audience, right? If you're a lawyer and Mem says something that we shouldn't say, just let us know so we can delete the episode.
Listen, I looked it up and I read a Reddit thread about it, which is, of course, 100% credible.
Yeah.
And people were saying after the verdict has been said, which it has, you can say whatever you want about the trial itself. It's apparently straight up illegal to say anything about what happened in the deliberation room. But interesting point that I'll get to in a second is I was not actually in the deliberation room because I was an alternate. So
okay.
I watched the whole trial. But then I just didn't get to deliberate at the end. But I had to like pay attention and take notes and everything as if I might.
That's amazing. Oh my God, I'm so jealous.
But then they just let me go home when they were about to deliberate.
Well, how many? It was like one day, right? So it must have been a pretty obvious crime that was committed.
Yeah. So I guess where should I start? I feel like I should start just at the beginning of my whole experience.
Right, you know, you get the letter and they go, you gotta come.
Yeah. So I got the letter like weeks ago, obviously, and then did not put it on my calendar, completely forgot about it. I filled out the little form online that you're supposed to do and then completely forgot about it. And then the day before, I think it was Wednesday that I was supposed to come in. So on Tuesday evening, I get a text that's like, reminder, your jury duty's tomorrow. And I'm like, oh,
whoa,
shit.
Whoa, that's nice of them to do that. That's when you texted me and you were like,
yeah.
Not gonna be doing, yeah.
So
I'm surprised they are that organized. I figured they would let you miss it and then fine you, you know?
No, so. Everybody in the court system was like very nice, which is just a thing I've noticed about where I live now. Everybody's just very kind. All the service workers and everybody is just like, everybody's just awesome and friendly.
I love that.
Compared to where I've lived before in the Midwest and on the East Coast, where everybody just like wants you to die. Everybody here is really
That's what
cool.
I like about the East Coast. That's a
you
good
like
way of
that?
Putting it. It's not that they want you to die. It's just that they're not that bothered either way. I feel like that's the vibe I get from the East Coast, and I appreciate it.
Yeah. It's funny because I lived in Philly on my own. I was 17, technically, when I moved there at first, because I have, like, a late birthday. I'm, like, young for my grade. Mm-hmm. So I'm 17. I'm trying to set up all my own utilities and stuff. And all the service workers in Philly are just, like, so mean.
Yes.
That, like, you ask any question, a basic question that's, like, a normal thing to ask, and they glare at you as if you've just, like, ruined their whole life.
They just go, like, yeah. Yeah,
yeah.
That's, yeah.
They like, act like it's a yes, you should no question, already
like,
know
no.
everything.
Yeah. It's good. You grow up quick, you know? You get that experience.
I guess
you get that grit.
Yeah, but I had to like... So I guess I was 18 by the time I had my own apartment. I lived in the dorms the first year. But I had to like take this bus downtown. For some reason, the only way I could set up one of my services was physically going all the way downtown and going into this office. And this woman that was helping me just like was glaring at me everything I asked, barely said any words to me. But it's the kind of thing where you'll ask the question and they'll be so offended looking, and then but they'll do it for you perfectly.
Yeah. Like, we love that. I don't have a problem with that at all.
They'll give you exactly what you need, but they'll just like hate everything about it.
It's just a test. They're trying to test your constitution. Because really, they know that if you can't handle this, you're going to be killed by living in Philadelphia. So it's actually a really good, like, they're trying to make sure that you're okay to live here by testing you in this small way. Because if not, someone's going to behead you in the streets of Philly. Yeah. Not to talk about that at the start of a YouTube video that now has to be labeled as ineligible for monetization.
No, it's fine.
There you go.
Anyway, so everybody at the court here was really nice. The people like running the whole jury thing were very nice and like willing to answer questions and stuff. It's a lot of waiting around in the morning. There were, I want to say like, I think she actually said there were like 75 people that showed up for jury duty that day, which eventually, because there was only the one trial, the one that I ended up on. So the 75 gets whittled down to 7. Because it was a 6-juror trial plus an alternate, which was me. Which I didn't even know. I had never heard of an alternate until they told me I was the alternate. I was also so close to not being on the jury at all. Like, it's hard to explain the process, but I made it all the way to the point where the lawyers are interviewing you in the courtroom when there was like maybe 20 of us left. It was there was all these different stages. It was kind of like I felt like I was going on American Idol or something. Like, people were getting eliminated. Yeah. I made
it like
on...
being on Wings of Voice, perhaps.
Right, exactly. I made it into the actual courtroom and the lawyers were asking questions. Which, like, I'll talk a little bit about that experience. Really weird. Like, yeah. I don't know. I understand why it is this way and all this stuff has to be on the court record and whatever. But super weird that you have to go in when you get to the point where you go into the courtroom and then the lawyers are asking you questions. You have to like answer questions about your life in front of everybody. And they like want to know about, you know, your history with
in front of
crime.
Who?
In front of like all the other jurors and the lawyers and the defendant. And
okay. That's a little weird. I would have assumed it would have been in front of the lawyers. But
it's everybody that's
involved
in the trial. I guess
like lawyers and judge maybe, but the idea that you have to answer these questions in front of all the other jurors and the like defendant.
Yeah.
That maybe is a little weird. I think it's genius that both sides have to agree on every juror. I think that's a really good idea, but I would have assumed it would have been more of like a one-on-one, like you plus the two attorneys. But there you go.
Exactly.
I don't know if I could have handled that.
That's more what I was expecting, I guess, but it's because as soon as they eliminate enough people and like decide on the jury, they literally started the trial that very second. It was like we didn't even have a break between, like, they're like, okay, we've decided on the jury, here you are, you're in the right seats, and now we begin opening statements.
And do you know, do they, I'm sure this is all Googleable, right? But now you're my personal expert on the legal system. Do they have to select from this pool? Like, what if they don't like any of the 75 people or whatever that were there?
I think,
like,
so it got to a point where both the lawyers asked us questions. One guy got excused during the questions part because I guess everybody agreed, like the judge and both the lawyers agreed, because he was actively trying to get out of it. He was pulling shit out of his ass about being biased against... It was so vague. Like, he was...
And you could hear all this. You were in the room.
Yes, that's why it's so humiliating, actually, because he wanted to get out of it, but he had to say his bullshit excuses that he was, like, clearly just lying, trying to get out of it in front of everybody in the room. So truly, like, debasing himself in front of everybody because he was trying to explain how he was just inherently biased against people based on how they look. But he didn't.
Whoa.
But he
I
didn't
love
want.
That. I'm extremely racist. I
no,
can't be on this
that's
trial.
That's the thing, though, is the reason it was so awkward is because he didn't want to say that he was racist or sexist or anything. And so he was trying to say it was just based on other things. He was like, it's not even about race. It's just like, it's just how they look. It's just how they present
it's
themselves.
Like, it's not the color of their skin. It's just like the vibe of their skin color. You know, it's different. It's not the same thing. That's incredible.
So that was horrible because that was some serious secondhand cringe, like the way that I feel watching the rehearsal sometimes, but it was in real life. And I I was so cringed out. I was kind of just like wringing my hands and looking down, like trying to distract myself from what was happening. Because he just came up with a different excuse every time they asked him, because they were like really like over and over again being like, well, what do you mean by that? And he had to keep doubling down over and over.
Maybe, do you think they, like, as lawyers, they've done it for so long, they knew that at the end of this rope, he would have to say that he was racist, so they were just
trying to get him to finally say that.
Like, all right, we know it. We're not going to pick this guy, but let's just, like, try to get him to say it.
I mean, the defendant was white, but I guess he could be...
He could be anti-white.
You know, he was white himself.
I don't like
himself,
the vibe of his skin color. Oh, yeah, interesting. Okay, self-hating.
Yeah, self-hating.
But what are you going to do?
Hey guys, this is me editing. I just wanted to actually answer Austin's question because I forgot about it halfway through what I was talking about. But as to why they can't just kick off everybody, they excused that one guy based on the answers to his questions because the judge and everybody agreed. And then they went into some kind of official voting process. I think they had a limited number of rounds of voting where the lawyers would each hand a little slip of paper to the judge with who they wanted to kick off. I think that's what it was. So there was a set number of rounds of kicking people off. So they couldn't possibly just kick off everybody. Also from this point, I'm going to start to cut a lot of stuff out of this episode because I don't want to go to jail for contempt of court. I'm too young to go to jail. My future is too promising. I'm paranoid. Like I said, I'm pretty sure I looked up that it's okay to talk about the trial, but just to be on the safe side, I'm going to cut out basically all of the details because I really did just sit here and yap about absolutely everything in the trial and all of my opinions on it. And it's one thing to say that to a friend and it's another to publish a public podcast about it. And I think that that's probably a pretty stupid move. So if this episode ends up being a little bit short, that's why.
Wait, so have you done jury duty? Why do I feel like you've told me you have?
I got called in for the only time ever was, it was actually for a grand jury, which is really interesting. The process for that is very long, but I was not selected. So it was
long day. Okay.
I was not selected. I really wanted to be, but I wasn't. So
grand jury is a big commitment. It's like a month.
It is. Yeah. It's like multiple weeks and it's like really involved and it's playing a really important role in what we hope the legal system does, which obviously it doesn't always do, but nope, I wasn't allowed. I wasn't cool enough.
Yeah. I will say
there was no reception though. Did you have reception for your cell phone? Cause it was in the basement of some building in downtown New Orleans or whatever. And there's no reception
when the trial started, they took our phones.
But I mean, like, while you're waiting in the waiting room, right?
While we're waiting,
they select
you.
They took your phone. Wow.
Yeah, because we're not supposed to have our phones at all, I think, during the trial or on breaks when we go into the jury room.
Yeah, because you don't want to be, like, Googling stuff about, you know.
Yeah.
You're like, hey, chat, what do you think here's the facts of this case. How should I vote?
Yeah, so something interesting to me was, like, okay, they tell you you're not supposed to look up anything about the case or the people involved. Okay, understood. You're also not allowed to look up details about the laws involved in the case. So, like, I was a little bit confused. The charge, which I'd never heard of in my life, was menacing, which is...
Whoa.
Oh, gosh. What was the wording they used? Intentionally causing fear of serious physical harm through words or actions.
Okay.
So
sounds like something you'd want to be able to charge someone with potentially.
Yeah. So it's basically threatening someone in a serious way.
Yeah.
Anyway, they just gave the legal definition before the opening statements. They just said the legal definition and that was it. And they didn't elaborate. And I had never heard of this charge. And I was like, okay, I have a lot of questions about like what specifically would count as this, but you're not even allowed to look up like facts about the law, apparently. Like I couldn't have even Googled what menacing was to find a better explanation of it, which was interesting to me.
Well, I guess it's tricky because if you were to look for because the only thing that is on the law is the law, right? So if you were to look up explanations of the law, you're getting some third party's opinion of what that law stands for. And that's, since that's not the actual codified opinion of the law, they wouldn't want you using that to, like, make your decision. What's interesting to me is that part of the law is what's written in the law, and then the other part is like, hey, can I hear some examples of cases that people have been convicted of this crime before, like precedent from past cases? Mm-hmm. And that's really useful, and I'm surprised that they wouldn't allow. I can see why you wouldn't want to, like, hey, go to Reddit and read what people think menacing means on Reddit or whatever, right? But it would be helpful to be able to look at historical precedent for, like, give me some examples of times people have been charged with this so I have a sense of what this really means. You know what I mean?
During deliberation, you can, like, write a written question to the judge.
Like, put it through a slot?
Yeah, I guess you have to, like, provide all your questions in writing, and they may or may not answer it. Because I think
you're really just supposed
to judge on what you see in the trial. So it's, like, supposed to be, I guess, the responsibility of the state lawyer to explain properly what the law is that they're trying to charge this person with.
Right. But they're going to tell you a version of it that makes them sound good, and then the defense is going to tell you that it actually means a different thing, right? So that makes it very confusing.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. That's exactly what happens.
I guess that's the whole thing, is you're interpreting this vague set of words in the law as the law was passed, and it's up to you to decide how you interpret it based on what the lawyers are telling you, because you're on the jury, because your opinion is what they want, I suppose. That's exactly the whole philosophy. Kind of crazy.
So, the law is very interpretable. Like, it's...
Yes.
I don't know. It's a little
That's
bit
why
like
precedent's important.
Subjective, because they really do just give you like a one sentence definition of something, and then you have to decide if it is that.
Yes. I'm sure it depends on the law, right? Some are very long and detailed, but menacing is pretty vague. I do think stuff like this is so fascinating because it gets to a really core difficulty, which is like, it sounds simple, but like, how do you determine if someone did a crime? And there's so many like normative things in that statement. What is the crime? Who decided the crime? What are the words? Does it fit this definition? Who decides if it fits the definition? Mm-hmm. And then how do you decide, like, when no one was present for it, if it fits the definition? And it's like, so you build these complicated systems. Oh, you can't talk to the judge. You have to send this because we're trying to avoid that. And you can't read anything on Google because we don't want you to this. Like, it is a really, really complicated and imperfect.
It is. And
thing.
Some of it is just kind of funny, like the fact that if the judge says, you know, that was an invalid question or strike that from the record, you're literally just supposed to pretend you didn't hear it. Like, that's the only there's no
and it's funny because then it's like the lawyers can like kind of manipulate that in a way, like try to, and but it's like, how do you prevent that? Like, it's just like, I find it so fascinating.
There's no practical way I can actually make myself forget I heard it. Like, whether you like it or not, it is factoring into my mind somehow.
Yes, and they take advantage of that, you know? Because I think there's a... Oh, what happened?
What happened to you?
My loading screen just started. Host left the game. That's what it says for me.
Hello again.
Back to it. All right, anyway, continue.
What
How
was I talking
so
about?
So
I can give you a little bit of the trial drama, I think. I mean, so it was like 1.5 days, basically, because the second day was a full day of like being in the trial and then deliberations at the very end, which I left before. And the first day was like when they just started, like the same day that I got called in for jury duty, I ended up watching, you know, the opening statements. They might have even... No, they started questioning witnesses that day, too. So isn't that crazy that, like, I went straight from being interviewed by the lawyers to just now the trial starting and they had a witness and everything?
Did it make you want to play Phoenix Wright?
What is that? Is that the attorney game?
Ma'am, it's Ace Attorney.
Yeah, okay.
Jeez.
I've never played
it. I
know what it is.
I learned all my stuff about law.
Oh, okay.
Objection. They say that a lot. Did anyone have any objections during this trial?
Yeah, there were some objections.
Oh, my God. How cool is that?
There were some objection hearsay.
Did the judge say sustained?
Yeah.
Wow. It was like you were in a celebrity place, like Hollywood.
I know. It really was like a movie.
That's,
you know,
cool.
The defense.
I love that for you.
The defense lawyer was really trying to butter us up. His whole like strategy was that he would come right up to the box, like right in our faces, and like talk really quietly to like bring us in closer and like make it feel intimate.
I love that they're allowed to do that. Because there's a version of this where
it's
like,
theater.
And there's positives
really
and negatives. But there, yeah. There's a version of it where you like put the jury behind glass or whatever and then kind of do whatever. But again, there's like pluses and minuses you get of all these things. Like it actually is probably good to have the point of a jury trial is to have human beings of your community judging you as a human being in your community.
Yeah.
And so it would be a little bit creepy and cold if you were just like deciding someone's fate from behind a box. But on the flip side, then what you get is these lawyers coming up and being like, you guys know how it is. You know, sometimes you get a little mad.
That's exactly.
You can feel the vibe and, you know, you just go a little crazy.
That's exactly like, how dude. He was talking.
Crazy. I mean, they have to try, you know.
He had like, I don't know if it was an actual like southern drawl or just the way that he was talking. He
well,
had
here,
like a
see,
very,
you know,
he had a very slight southern drawl and a very deep voice, and so it really was like playing into this like warm, friendly guy energy that he was trying to portray.
Well, you know, he did his best.
Anyway, so another just like interesting thing about the whole experience for me, just all the people that you meet being on a jury and the fact that when you pick like random people from the community, I mean, they were literally, I think like half the people, there were like 75 people that got there in the morning, like half of them were eliminated immediately, I think on just a random drawing, basically.
Yeah. 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 That's
so
how they did it for us.
Unlucky me. But
well,
when you're literally just picking people through random numbers, you end up with such a wide array of types of people and backgrounds and personalities that end up in this room. And it's just very interesting. And it really made me think in that context, everybody seems like such a character. Like we had like...
Yes.
We had a freaking 93-year-old man on the jury. He definitely was not required to do it. I think if you're over 75, you don't have to do it, but he showed up anyway.
Yeah, part of the community.
And we had like a teacher and like just people with all different kinds of jobs. And it was like, wow, like everybody is their own little cartoon character. I mean,
isn't
we had a,
cool?
a freaking
you're
YouTuber.
You're a YouTuber. Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't kick you out right then and there.
Oh my God, I can't believe I didn't even say this. So I get all the way to the where the lawyers are questioning me. Yeah, it was the defense guy. He goes, and juror 91, 91 was me. And I go, nice. oh shit, in my head. He goes, I see here you're a YouTuber.
Oh my God, I would have had to commit menacing on that questioner if he asked me that.
And he goes, what do you make videos about?
Oh my God. That's the worst thing I've ever heard. Holy cow.
And I had to say, video games.
Jesus.
And he went, oh, cool. And moved on. Just, I think that's all the main things I had to say, but there's a lot of stuff that happened, obviously, that I'm not even thinking of. I was just going to ask if you had questions or if I covered everything.
Let's see, you've answered a lot of my questions, whether they said objections or sustained, and like just generally how the process works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much exactly
really
like TV
picture.
Is my opinion.
Yeah. this is probably the only other thing I'd be curious about, when you're going through this and they're doing the trial, how are you determining what you feel like is relevant to remember? Like,
I took pretty thorough notes just in case, because
everything,
pretty much everything they were saying. Yeah.
Do they provide a pen?
Yeah. I mean, a pen and a pad of paper was like all
nice.
We were allowed to have.
Fascinating.
Anyway.
Well, I'm really glad that you went to jury duty. That was,
I did my civic duty.
Enjoyed that. Yeah. Now you're good for like what? 5 years or something?
Only 2 years, apparently.
Oh, jeez.
They
must
years.
Be running low on jurors up there.
Yeah, and a lot of people that made it to the interview stage had done jury duty before.
Hmm. Do you want to talk about this airplane show?
Yeah, that was my other big topic for the day.
Those are the two.
I would love to know your opinion as a plane man.
Here's the thing. So this Nathan Fielder guy, this is what my genuine opinion was. Obviously, it was extremely funny.
Yeah.
And very impressive. But I thought it was also very touching. I cried 2 times during this show because I thought some parts of it were so kind of complicated and relatable,
yeah.
like in terms of the inner dynamics between people and navigating social situations and navigating conflict. And then also, it was very, I thought, inspiring as a YouTuber. I was like, dude, how cool is it to, this may be, this show might have inspired me to have the conversation that I was telling you I had with someone right before this mm-hmm. that I'm not going to talk about on air. But it was that type of energy that I was like, I can go for whatever I want to go for.
Yeah.
Like, and I feel like remembering that you're allowed to be playful and curious and do whatever you want is like a really crazy thing. Now, mm-hmm. I do have a few specific thoughts, obviously, because there's the aviation-related business in this show. First of all, you had talked to me once about how he did get a commercial pilot's license. And I was like,
yes.
That's amazing. But what
he
got... Because
people were finding it on the internet... Just, I guess, because it's public record that he had a commercial pilot's license. And I remember asking you if that meant that he could fly a 737. And you were like, no way.
No, right. Which is so funny. So the way that they did more or less explain it in the show, but just for clarity, in order to fly a 737, typically you need what's called a private pilot's license, which is what I have. You need an instrument license, which is like a thing that lets you fly in the clouds just without being able to see outside. You need a commercial pilot's license, which is just like making sure that you can fly really, really good, like making sure you're really good at
fly
it so
good.
You can fly for money. And then from there, you need something called an ATP, which is an airline transport pilot certificate. Now, what that means is that you can transport people in an airplane, mm-hmm. like passengers in an airplane as part of these operations. What Nathan did is he got his private, his instrument, his commercial, but he said, well, wait, if I don't want to transport passengers, do I need an ATP or can I just go get a 737 license? And I don't know if anyone's thought of that loophole before, but apparently you can
well,
do that.
Well, because what reason would they have to do that?
Yeah, exactly. Because most
other
people want to fly 737.
Situation.
Other than it's this situation, or if you want to be a ferry pilot, which funnily enough, he also became ferrying these planes around the world, which is if I wasn't a YouTuber, that's the job I would want to have. I think that job sounds amazing. The cool thing about that, and I think that a lot of people don't realize, is that above a certain size, every single airplane is its own license. So with my private pilot's license, I can fly a variety of tiny airplanes without getting a specific license for each one. But above a certain size, like to fly a 737, you have to do as much work, if not more, as you did to get your pilot's license just for the 737. So it is like that he glosses over in the show, which he does for everything, but it is a pretty serious amount of work.
Yeah.
That man in his brain, he knows every part of a 737.
Mm-hmm.
He knows how every system connects to every other system, how the electrical system is run. If this goes wrong, what does that affect? The amount of knowledge that's inside of Nathan Fielder's brain about a 737, it really can't be overstated. So when I saw that,
I wonder if he ever reached a point when he was like mid 737 training where he's like, what the fuck am I doing?
There's no way he would have done it if he didn't have a latent interest in this. I wouldn't be surprised if what happened was he was like, I want to go get my pilot's license. And he started doing it. And as getting his private, he learned all this bullshit about like the medical licenses and how mm-hmm. you can't talk about having any problems ever and how pilots are like, really, it's a big problem. And then that maybe is when he had the idea for the show. I wouldn't be surprised if it was in that, because there's no way you would be able to sit through the amount of training that he had to sit through. If you didn't actually want to do it. And he got a job as a fucking ferry pilot. So obviously he does have an actual interest in it to some degree, which
I
is crazy.
I just mean once he had put all that work in and he's actually like started the 737 training and all this stuff for the show, I don't know. I would feel so much pressure that like I had to do this fucking crazy thing at this point because I've already put so much resources into it just for this TV show. Like, I don't know. I would have felt a lot of like pressure and anxiety about it. I just wonder how he felt about it through the process, I guess.
Well, he obviously doesn't have any anxiety, or else they wouldn't let him fly a plane.
Right, now. Of course.
That's the way that this works. Yeah, that was one of the things I wanted to touch on, because I think the very last quote that he says in the show is something like, no one is allowed in the cockpit if there's something wrong with them. So if you're there, you must be okay.
Yeah.
And obviously that was a joke a little bit, but there is something like immediately that it reminded me so much of what is so cathartic about flying a plane is because when you're doing that, there is like a weird truth to that. Like if you're flying a plane, if you're qualified to do that, you must be okay to be able to do that. So you're in a place where you are okay. Like there's this weird underlying truth that if you're flying a plane, you must be able to fly a plane. And if you're able to fly a plane, things can't be that bad, you know? And I found that kind of touching in a way. Like it's the process of learning how to fly and learning all about flying was like really soothing on my brain, because it boils the act of being a human being down to a science, or it tries to, which right. is kind of what the show tries to do. How do we boil the act of talking with another human being down to like a weird science that we can then calculate and fix? But that is like a really cathartic thing and a really like comforting thing for me about flying planes. It's like when you're doing it, nothing really matters other than that you can do it. So everything else kind of like falls away. Like as soon as you get up in the air, you're like, I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm in exactly the right spot. And that means everything's okay. And that's like a real, him speaking to that a little bit, even if that wasn't necessarily the way he meant it, was meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
To me,
it's a completely logical task. It's running a machine.
It has to be, right? Yeah.
So there's no
people's lives are at stake.
You know, you don't have the anxiety, I guess, of there being subjectivity like there is with human relationships. It's just you and a machine.
And where that causes problems is obviously there is subjectivity because human beings have feelings, and feelings do get in the way of operating a machine in that way. But
right, especially when you have two pilots.
Especially when you have two pilots, but they do. I like aviation because it does its best to like create systems for determining your mental acuity. Like there's all these checklists that they want you to run in terms of like one of the ones that I use almost every day in my life, unironically, is a checklist we have called the I'm Safe checklist, where you before you fly, it's your job to check the aircraft, but it's also your job to check the pilot and make sure the pilot's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so the I'm safe checklist is you go down and it's illness. Are you sick in any way? Medications. Have you been taking any medications or like pharmaceutical drugs or any drugs, obviously? Stress. Are you stressed about anything? Alcohol. Have you had any alcohol recently? Fatigue. Are you tired? And then eating and like drinking. Have you had enough to eat and drink? And that's like a checklist that I use in my day-to-day life. If I'm having like a really bad day and I don't know why, I'm like, let me sit back and run down this list. And then I'm always like, you know what? I am actually kind of stressed today about this and I haven't really eaten enough. And then I'm like, oh, I'm just a machine. I'll fix these two things. And then boom, bang, boom.
Yeah.
And I like that about flying. It's like, I find the tools for
every
that
every single month.
Useful.
When I'm PMSing and I forget about it and I have like, the worst.
Yeah.
I always have like 24 hours where I hate myself more than I ever have in my life. And I think everything's horrible. And then I realize what it was the next day. And I'm like, oh, that happens every time. And I always forget. I always have this one day where I think suddenly that one day everything got really, really bad.
It was a lovely show. Yeah, it just reminded me how great flying is. I mean, I remember there was this quote. Do you remember that talk show host Craig Ferguson? You remember him back in the day?
Yeah, I used to watch him a lot in high school for some reason. I think because that was my era when we didn't have any cable or streaming services, and I would watch the literal analog television.
That was my whole childhood.
That was most of my childhood. But
he learned to fly at one point. And he said the thing that he liked about flying is that, he worked in Hollywood, and he said, in Hollywood, it's your job to bullshit about what your skills are. It's your job to bullshit to get whatever job you need to do to get through whatever you need to do. And in aviation, if you lie about your capabilities, you die. that day you die if you lie about what you're capable of doing. And he said that kind of like removing all the bullshit from it. It's like everything that happens with flying is real. Nathan Fielder can't fake being capable enough to fly a 737. There's no, it has to be real. And that's just, it's, I think that's really cool. I think it's, there's something really grounded in a ironic, pun not intended kind of way, I suppose, about that. I did see people saying that, like people in the comments of, because you can watch the videos of him doing the thing and there's all the comments on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I did see people being like, I can't believe that that guy let Nathan Fielder land a 737 when all he had ever done was be in the simulator. I can't believe.
Right, but that's what they all do, apparently.
It's literally what everyone does. That's how, what else would you do? That's the way you have a guy sitting there who's better at it than you. And he watches. And it's supposed to be like a trained, like, captain person. But right. I think they said the guy that he was with was a 737 captain.
Yes. Yeah, he was a captain. He was just playing the co-pilot.
So yeah, it
for
was
that
just like, part. There's no, like, that person, the other co-pilot, it wasn't going to let them die. Like, it's not that. As long as you trust that Nathan Fielder doesn't want to die, it would be pretty hard for you guys to die in that circumstance if the other guy's paying attention. So I just wanted to call that out as like a, yeah, this sure is how people learn
it's
how to land the planes. They don't.
A little bit crazy, though. The fact that he didn't have like nearly the number of hours that you're supposed to. I get that he knew how to do it in simulation, yes. But it's still, he had much, much less experience than people usually do in that situation.
He did, but, and this is overstating it to a certain extent, but like, if you really walked someone through it and you were there, like you could probably, and this is probably not true, but we're going to pretend it is. If I put you in the cockpit of a 737 with a really well-trained 737 captain and they walked you through it, probably nothing bad would happen. You wouldn't be able to do it, but you would not get anywhere near close enough to kill everyone before the captain would be like, all right, I'm doing this. Like, it would be so obvious if something was going wrong
right
pretty far in advance, unless literally right before the runway, he just pushed down into it and killed them intentionally.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's all of that stuff, if you're paying attention, is pretty easy to catch.
Yeah.
Well in advance.
I love that they had
anything going wrong, so.
The fact that they had another little plane filming from the outside.
Yes.
Was that literally just because he thought people wouldn't believe it and he wanted to get footage of his face through the window from the outside? Like,
I think probably, yeah.
Because that was so crazy. They were having to like maneuver around this tiny plane flying so close to them the whole time.
Well, and I love that it was like stressing, or it seemed like it was stressing the other guy out.
Yeah.
You know, it's, but yeah, I feel like if I was Nathan Fielder doing that, especially knowing the nature of like the show being a big trick, I would want footage of me out there. Now, I did hear this theory that like the one thing that was a trick is that some people think he loaded everyone onto the plane, they got in and then sat down, and then secretly they unloaded all the passengers off of the plane so that when they were actually flying, the co-pilot thought there were passengers, but he didn't actually put anyone in danger. I could believe that. I don't know 100% sure if that would be the case, but I could see him going like, hey, listen, safety is no accident, right? It must be planned. That's
I just
what they
don't
tell
see
us.
Any reason why, like, just based on who Nathan is, based on watching the rest of the show, I don't see why he would lie about anything. If he says he's doing something at this point, I believe him based on everything else he's done. Like,
well,
has
yeah,
he ever straight up like said in the narration, this is what I'm doing, and then he wasn't doing it? I don't think that's happened.
Well, do you remember that old David Blaine magic trick? Do you ever watch a little David Blaine?
I know of him.
One of his greatest magic tricks is this trick where he takes a needle and he stabs it through his arm and it goes all the way through the muscle and comes out the other side. And it's this magic trick to make it look like that this is what's happening. And the trick is that it's not a trick. He's literally stabbing himself through the arm with this giant rod. But he tells people it's a trick so that people are like, this is a trick.
So they're less disturbed.
Well, they're very disturbed because he like lets them touch it and move it around. And he says, you know, see how it really looks like it's going through my arm. This is the thing he says, but it actually is. But he's trying to play this double bluff on them. And so the real magic trick is that there is no magic trick. And that's kind of how I feel to some extent about Mr. Fielder at this point.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean there is no magic trick. Maybe there is a magic trick. I don't know. How deep does the rabbit hole go? It's hard to say.
I don't think it's a trick. I don't think after putting hours and thousands of dollars into doing all that training and figuring out the laws and like that there is this loophole and filming all these interviews of him asking people if it's okay if they're in a plane that he's flying, why would he then not do it? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And they're like, he's trained, he's licensed, he's qualified, yeah. It's safe. I see. Yeah. It almost would be unnecessary work to just make it be a trick.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm very surprised that the one pet peeve that I had about the show is that I was really curious because they show his first of all, I love watching how bad he was at learning to fly. Extremely relatable. I wasn't. It didn't take as long as
that
him.
That part was so funny.
Oh, man.
That they said they kept giving him different teachers because they couldn't figure out what his problem was.
And just listening to him. Listening to him get scolded by air traffic and the way he reacted to it was just, it was just so comforting to see somebody else deal with that because it's so normal. We've all done embarrassing things talking to air traffic. The other day, this is not a joke. The other day I was flying, me and Ashton were going flying and we did a tour over the city and we're coming back in. And at my airport, this is not quite a Bada Bang story, but it's in the same, it's kind of in the same vein. We were
new Bada Bang, everybody.
Yeah. It's, we were coming in and at my airport, we've got, there's really two main runways that we land on. There's this kind of a small one and a big one. And normally we land on the small one cause I have a small plane. But there was other people landing on the small one. And so we were coming in and you call them and you say, hey, this is where we are and we're coming into land, and they give you a runway. And so they told me, hey, you can come in and you can land on 36 left was the name of the runway. And so I say, okay, great, cleared to land 36 left, da 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 da. Unbeknownst to me, so you know there's this little button you have to be pushing. And if you're pushing that button, you're transmitting whatever you're saying.
Were you not
out
transmitting?
To everyone on the frequency. No, I was transmitting when I said it. But I forgot to take my finger off the button. I was like, it was kind of like, you know, it's an easy button to push.
Yeah.
And so I said, you know, all right, great. Thank you. Clear to land 36 left. And then I said the name of my airplane. And then I turned to Aslan and I said, ooh, they gave us the big runway. That's exciting. I love the big runway. But I was transmitting that whole thing over the whole frequency.
Yeah.
So that everyone heard me go, ooh, the big runway.
That's
like I took
not
my pilot
that
voice
bad.
Off. And I turned my fake voice on. Well, the only problem with it. Yeah, so I go, okay, great, clear to land 36.
You make it a little bit deeper, a little more serious.
We get to land on the big runway. Exactly, yeah. So I transmitted that over to everyone on the frequency. Now, that's not a huge problem, except that when you're holding that button down, nobody else can talk. Only if someone has something important to say,
yeah.
Or they need to tell someone something, and everyone has to wait until you're done. Only one person can talk at a time. Or else it creates this big noise in your headset. So that was my slight embarrassing, but thank you for validating that it's really not that bad. I mean, probably a total of 12 people heard it, right?
No,
there's not that many people up there.
That's actually disappointing that you compared that to Bada Bing. It's not nearly as good.
Really? Good. There you go. I guess maybe for the pilots out there, it's going to be a Bada Bing story, but for the rest of y'all, it's just a regular old who cares kind of story. I wanted to ask and see, you know, to my great joy... You played a Bethesda video game the other day.
I did.
It seemed
Never
like you liked it.
It.
Did you actually like it? Are you going to continue to play it or nah? Was it just the content?
I don't know if I can put this in the pod because people are going to be mad at me, but no, I'm not going to play it again. I think it's boring.
That's a bummer. It was a really good video. It didn't seem like you thought it was boring while you were doing the video, so
well,
that's
I
good.
I can have fun doing anything.
I guess, yeah, that is sort of your specialty. But all right, there you go. No Oblivion. Sorry, folks.
I don't know.
It's
I don't know what
game,
it is.
Yeah.
I also couldn't get into Skyrim.
Yeah, they're kind of, I think, an acquired taste. I definitely really hated them for a long time. Thought Skyrim really, really sucked for a really long time.
Why did you think Skyrim sucked?
The game feel is really bad. Like,
yeah,
the way
I
that
agree
it actually feels to, like, swing your sword and stuff.
I don't like the combat.
But I kind of think of it, like watching public access television. Like there's something about eventually once you just accept how it feels, it's kind of like playing bad games in general. If you just take it for what it is and accept what it is, there is fun to be had. It's a little harder with Skyrim and stuff because you have, at least for me, you have like AAA video game brain and you're like, this should be good. But if you get that out and you're like, I'm just going to accept it for what it is, I still think it's super fun. But obviously it's not, I'm not going to force you to play.
Yeah, Oblivion. I mean, like,
my goodness, there's other games to play.
Disclaimer to everybody. I don't, no opinions that I ever say about games. Am I saying like, I am a game reviewer and this is what the game is. It's good or it's bad. I don't even really believe in that as a concept. I'm saying like me personally, did I have fun playing it? And me personally, I just think it's a little bit boring and that's okay. And I'm allowed and you're allowed to disagree with me.
So wait, what do you think is the greatest video game of all time?
I would not dare
don't
to
don't say you don't
say
believe. Stop it. No, stop.
What's the
tell me. Just what came into your head?
My
tell me what
favorite
came your head.
Game is Genshin
nope.
Impact.
No. Like, greatest game of all time. Genshin Impact. All right. I accept.
Oh, no.
I just want to know.
You're going to get me into some shit.
You can treat your opinions like scripture. You can give them objective validity if you just say it right, you know? Greatest game of all time, Genshin Impact. No question.
Okay, but
see
what I'm saying
that?
Is I don't agree with that, though.
But
I
that
think
is...
art is subjective, and I can only speak on what I enjoy or don't enjoy. And I'm making no claims about whether, like, somebody else might enjoy it.
Do you feel this way about all art?
I don't really care whether somebody says...
You're just here to have fun.
Yeah, I'm here to have fun. And I think many bad movies and bad games are a lot of fun and are some of my favorites.
Hold on, hold on. What do you mean bad movies? I thought there was no bad. What does that mean, then?
I mean, that's bad in quotes. That's like according to the public.
Okay. I didn't get the quotes. Got it. So based on conventional, current critical standards, they would be considered bad. But for you, there's no corollary between that and your ability to enjoy them.
Right.
I would totally agree with all of that for sure.
I don't care. It's like
Wait. When's the last time you watched a movie that you were like, that sucked, I hated that?
The movies that I think that about are ones that I'm so bored watching it that I just would rather be doing something else.
Right, that would be a bad movie for you.
For me.
But I'm just curious, when do you have that experience? Like, what can you think of a movie like Django Unchained?
I can think of two that I felt this about. The first one was the Green Lantern movie.
I did hear that was quite a slog.
We were like, I was in the theater watching that, and it was like 2/3 of the way through. And I went and took a long bathroom break because I just wanted to get out of the room.
I need to kill some time.
This is rare for me because, like I've said, I'm very easily entertained. I can be entertained by anything. I can like find humor in many like quote bad pieces of media. But there was just nothing entertaining about that movie to me. And then the other one. What was it called? It was a sci-fi movie that Brad Pitt was in.
Ad Astra?
And it was like mostly him doing some kind of solo journey, and there was supposed to be some drama about how it was an allegory for his relationship with his father. I don't know. It was the most boring sci-fi movie I've ever seen in my life.
Okay.
The dialogue was so corny, and there was just nothing interesting about it. So that's the only categories that I put things in my mind is like if it was boring or not boring.
You know what the only movie that I didn't like was?
What?
Where the Wild Things Are. You remember that?
I never saw that. You saw the movie of that?
Oh my God, I thought it was garbage.
It probably was.
I was so mad.
I believe you.
It felt like, you know how there's like boom, boom, clap, millennial alt pop?
Yeah.
It felt like that, but in a movie. It drove me nuts.
I'm so curious what that even means.
It's not good.
I gotta go watch that.
Don't worry about it. Don't. It's not good.
even to figure out what you're talking about.
I don't have time to go into it today, but I did just want to say that I actually started playing 3 new video games this week.
Wow.
And I really like all of them, okay?
What are they?
So we started playing Schedule 1, which we're playing right now.
Yeah.
I think it's really good.
It is
I'm
fun.
A big fan. I started playing Cyberpunk 2077 for videos. Absolute banger. Like, holy smokes. Like, we're talking, it's like GTA levels of cool detail world, but actually good.
Haven't you played that years ago for videos?
I did play it a long time ago, but it's been updated so much and it has all this whole new system and everything.
Okay.
So in my head, it was like this imperfect gem, whatever. But I just started playing it again for content. And I was just like, my God, this is a hell of a video game. Might be in terms of.
So it's much better now than it was, would you say?
I don't know. I did think it was pretty good back then. But yeah, now back then it was like, this is really good, but I can see why people are struggling with it. But now I'm playing it and I'm like, this is better than a Grand Theft Auto game. This is like if a Grand Theft Auto game was good and cool. This would be what it is like. Mm-hmm. It's just like such an unbelievable world. And then I started playing. Have you heard of this game, Clair Obscur? Clair Obscur, no. Expedition 33. Have you heard of this?
No, I'm Googling.
Okay. Well, it's like if Final Fantasy was French. It's some little studio
turn-based
in France.
Turn-based RPG.
Put out this
can't do it.
Turn-based. You don't like turn-based RPGs?
Too complicated for my tiny brain.
They are crazy complicated. It is insane how much, when you play a JRPG like that, how much knowledge they expect
this
you to go
like
into
really
it
cool
with.
Cool graphics, though.
The vibes are off the chain. The music's incredible. The story's very good. It's already like made me feel emotional. The dialogue's good. The characters are really strong. Just a really, really cool vibe. So I'm really excited to keep going in that one. But it's reminding me of, I know this won't mean anything to you, but it's reminding me of when I first played Final Fantasy X, and for a long time, that was my favorite game of all time. Mm. But if you go back now, you're like, oh, this is actually kind of just like a little cringy. Not necessarily in a bad way, but this, it feels like if Final Fantasy X was just like a little bit more grounded and a little bit better written, like better, just stronger dialogue. It all feels really, really good. So I just want to shout out Clair Obscur, cool. Expedition 33, made by an independent French studio, funded by, in part, the French government. Shout out Emmanuel, getting hit by your wife. That's sick. I'm not even making fun of him. I think that's fine. Kind of. I don't think it's fine. Let me just... I didn't mean it like that. I didn't mean it like that. Let's just go back. It's
okay, I'll end the podcast.